Well, hello there. Welcome to the story of us, from cosmic dawn to the depths of being. I'm your host, Jeff Ellison. We have a special episode for you today. You know, every era needs new voices, bright minds who rise from the noise to remind us who we are and who we might yet become. So welcome to the story of us, the next generation, a special series celebrating young visionaries, shaping their communities and reimagining the next chapter of the human story. This generation has come of age in unprecedented times, raised in the shadow of a global pandemic, navigating waves of anxiety and isolation, and walking through a digital landscape where truth itself feels negotiable. Social media promised connection, but really, too often delivered illusion. Information's become noise, and yet, amid the confusion, some young people have chosen a different path, one of empathy, integrity, and impact. These are their stories, the stories of those who turn challenge into compass and struggle into strength. They're future thought leaders, they're healers and bridge builders, rising not to escape the storm, but to help us guide us through it. Today, we're going to begin this journey with someone I've had the privilege to know since, well, before the world began to test him, since he was maybe 8 years old. A boy who once stood on a ball field in Middletown, Kentucky, glove in hand, spray-painted, helmet on top, heart wide open. I was his coach for years through wins and losses and the lessons that matter the most. And even then, you could tell something extraordinary stirring beneath the surface for this kid. That boy is now a man named Drake Ballard, a collegiate athlete, a mentor, and an advocate for children with disabilities. He's been honored by the NCAA, his city, and his peers. But perhaps his greatest achievements are written in quiet acts of kindness and the lives he's lifted up along the way. So, this is the story of Drake Ballard, the first voice in the next generation, a young man proving that purpose can still outshine the algorithm, and that compassion may yet be our most radical act of leadership. Drake, welcome.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Man,
I'm so excited.
So good to reconnect with you.
I know, it's amazing.
We spent a lot of time together when you were young, and I always knew there was something special about you. I really did.
Well, we always had that, like, you're like the second dad, you know? You're like the coach, the mentor. Like, we just always had that special connection. Like, I remember you... something was going on, like somebody was being mean to me or something, like one of the kids on the team, and you took me to Grater's Ice Cream and just sat me down, and you're just like, you know, like, there's all this noise, like, just be present or whatever you said. I don't remember, I was so young, but whatever you said sat with me, because you're just like, let's get away from it, let's just go do something fun. And yeah,
it was, yeah, looking back on those days, it really, you know, we teetered on the line of taking it too far, I yeah. think. Like, it was really supposed to be about fun, and it became something else.
For sure.
Know? And I think 100%. When I've heard from some of the other kids that continued on their baseball journey, it felt like what was almost out of bounds, because yeah. we were playing so much and
right.
we took it so seriously, has even gotten worse.
Yeah, well, and we were so good, too.
You were good.
We were all good.
Yeah, it was fun to go 60-6.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then I think that's what we all saw, the potential and what it could be. And we're just like, let's go get it.
Yeah.
And that, like, that's always my favorite part.
You did. And we had a fun team, and we had lots of different teams along the ways. You know, what we had the East Louisville Bats.
Yeah.
And even before that, the All-Stars.
The All-Stars.
Right. Yeah. And then man, you were a Sting and Team Easton.
Team Easton, yeah.
And we took it pretty far.
Yeah. I mean, that Team Easton team, if you call out the names and the accolades that are from the players on that team, like, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
About the time you were 10, mm-hmm. there were many of you, shoot some names out here, Ethan Hodge, Dalen Lyle, mm-hmm. some of the kids we had on the team. By the time you were 10, I couldn't teach you anything about baseball. Like, I wasn't going to teach you how to throw a three-seam fastball yeah. or, you know, take the right lead off. Mm-hmm. I was really there just to try to make it about something more than baseball.
Yeah. Well, and as you've grown to know baseball and same with me. A lot of baseball is not just about the ball and the bat. A lot of it is in your head. A lot of it is with your teammates. It's a team sport. It takes everybody to do something. And so I think the lessons that you brought, like, provide something that helps you with baseball, but it's also bigger than baseball. And that's huge.
It's been a fun part of my life now, being able to see you guys become, like, mm-hmm. becomes what you're going to be. Yeah. And watching you when you were, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and thinking, I have a pretty good suspicion of what this person is going to kind of turn out just by the way they approach life, even as a little kid. And so it's been really fun staying connected and watching you guys. So catch us up a little bit on, let's tell a little bit of your story. Your story is still in probably chapter one, but tell us about the prologue. So, you know, a little bit about high school and college and just give us the info, the stats there.
Okay. So I went to Martha Lane Collins High School in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Two little brothers, mom, dad, formerly known as A-Mom and A-Dad.
Still known as A-Mom.
Still known, yeah, not formally.
Forever A-Mom.
Forever A-Mom and A-Dad. And yeah, I graduated high school in 2021. I was committed to play Division II baseball at the University of Indianapolis. So moved away from home. Went to UIndy for a year and a half. Then I ended up transferring to a place called Purdue Northwest up in Hammond, Indiana. Pretty close to Chicago. Not everybody is locked in with Northwest Indiana. I certainly was not. And yeah, I've gotten very involved in the special needs community. I've always had like a kind of calling towards it. And there was a point in my college career where I kind of moved on from the like college excitement almost. Like you first figure out what alcohol is in college and like how to navigate that. And like that addiction is a real thing. And like, I don't know, there's just a lot of things that you figure out when you're on your own and you don't come home to mommy and daddy every night and they're doing your laundry, they're doing this, they're doing that. Like, it was really challenging at first for me when I went to college. So navigating that and then really just finding out what I wanted to do with my life. I had no idea. I'm just like, I play baseball my whole life. How can I do, what am I going to do in this world? What value am I going to add to the world? And I want to change the world. That's my goal, is I want to change the world in the way that I can and do it the best way that I can. That's what I tell my girlfriend. That's what I tell everyone, is just my goal is to change the world however I do that.
So you started this life of service, helping kids with disabilities, mental and physical disabilities, right?
Yes, sir.
We'll talk a little bit more about what that means, but do you remember when that calling first kind of sparked in you? Because I think you started doing this when you were in high school, right?
For sure. It started before high school. Actually, my grandma, Jerry Jo Tata, she has a brother with a disability. And so ever since a young age, she really preached the concept of inclusion to me. So every person that I saw with a disability, I made it like a mission to go out of my way to make sure that they felt like that they didn't have a disability. That they weren't different, that they are a human at the end of the day. And I think sometimes we miss that. Sometimes we coddle people with disabilities or like make them feel extra special, like, and cater to them. But at the end of the day, they just want to be treated like a human being. So Tata very much, helped me see that. And then I remember when I was in elementary school, my mom started a thing called the mother-son event because she was jealous that daddy and daughters got their time, but A-Mom doesn't get her time with her boy. So she's like, all right, let's do a mother-son event. And there's a kid with a disability playing in the kickball game. And everybody was not picking on him, but like he'd barely kick the ball and they'd like throw it at him and be like, you're out. And it's like, all right, like he has a disability and he's just trying to have fun, and everybody else was taking it like a little too far. And so I remember I pulled him aside and he kicked the ball and I ran with him all around the bases so that he could hit a home run and feel what it was like to like, and he was so happy. And his mom came up to my mom and she, said like, is your son Drake Ballard? And she's like, oh God, what did he do? She's like, I just wanted to thank you for raising a son like you have. And I don't know how old I was. I was in elementary school. So I've had that in me my whole life. Something, I'm not sure what it is, but it's in me.
Wow. And so in college, tell us a little bit about your major was and kind of what you were doing there.
So I was studying psychology. I knew I wanted to work in the special needs field, but I wasn't really sure what I could do besides being a special needs teacher. And that's not something that I really wanted to do. Because there's a lot of factors in the school that go into that. Like, I don't want to be responsible for 20 kids, especially 20 kids that require extra care and love and support. Like, that's really hard. And so studying psychology, and then I came across what ABA and what a BCBA was, which is a board certified behavior analyst. And it's studying and helping improve socially significant behavior and really trying to have kids reach meaningful goals and things that will help them in life, basically. And so that's how I kind of got on the path.
And you're currently working on your graduate degree, right?
Yes, I'm getting my master's degree at Ball State, and it's in applied behavior analysis or analytics. I always get confused with that word, but
it's amazing to hear. I think more people, and I hope they listen to your story, I hope they listen to this podcast and you share it with your friends, because I think there's a lot of kids your age, or young men your age, that are really struggling with, now that this college thing is over, I have to start a life. What in the world am I going to do? And it's not easy out there.
100%.
And it's one of the hardest times ever to graduate from college and try to get that career and get on that path. And there's a lot of people your age that I know through my children and through the people I've been around that really are struggling with this.
Right.
And it sounds like what you were able to do is take a deep breath, think about what you were most passionate about, what filled your cup. And that started when you were in elementary school, that you carried on. And you've been able to say, hey, look, it's not that hard of a choice.
No.
You do what resonates with you. Yeah. You do what you feel in your heart is your mission.
Yeah.
And you make a career out of it.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Oh, that's 100% right. And I feel like we want that perfect option, right? Like, you want that, like, oh, the six-figure job with, it's in my hometown. It's got the benefits. It's got, like, it sounds so entertaining. It sounds so fun. But in reality, sometimes that's not going to be available. Sometimes, for me, I was a junior in college, and I wanted to work with people with disabilities and find a job. So we were in the gym one day working out, and I saw kids with disabilities come in and were cleaning the workout equipment and also were, like, putting themselves through a workout. So I went up to the lady that was working with them and I said, how do I get involved in this? I'd be really interested in being involved in this. I didn't know the lady. I didn't know the kids. I was just like, I want to do this. And I'm like, I would like to make it a job. I would like to make some extra money. Like, I love this field. I have history in this field. Like, how can I do this? So they sat me down and they're like, we couldn't give you a job, but you can volunteer with us. So then I volunteered with them. I would go work out, go home, shower, come back and meet the kids at the weight room and help them clean. I'd put them through workouts. We'd walk around the track, shoot basketball, stuff like that. And eventually they said, we have this place that we want. We're going to recommend you for a job. And this was maybe a month or two after I started volunteering. And so I applied and they rejected my application and said, he has too busy of a schedule, like with baseball, school, like it's just too much. I don't think that we could fit him in there. And so the lady that I would volunteer with, she knew people at the company. She walked into the company and said, you need to hire this guy. He will give you something that you guys don't have right now. And it's worth it. I know he has a busy schedule, but what I've seen with him, like, he will help your consumers. And so then they hire me.
You look for the helpers, right? I mean, that's part of it, is that if you have something, and my daughter Peyton and I talk about this a lot, manifesting your own destiny is not about sitting back and praying to God that all your wishes are going to come true. Yeah. But it does mean taking all the opportunities that you have to tell the story of what's important to you. And there's always people that are there to lift you up.
Right.
That person that hand walked your resume back mm-hmm. and said, no, you're making a mistake.
Yep.
I feel like that's another good lesson for kids at your age, is that if you really want something, you know what you want, tell the universe, tell everybody that you know a little bit about what you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Transfer that enthusiasm for the work that you're doing to other people, and they all want to help you.
Right.
Everyone in the world, I think there's a lot of kids that feel like they have this, it's them against the world,
yeah.
and it's just the opposite. The world is there to help you fulfill your dreams.
Yeah.
You just have to get it out there, right? So sure. one of the things I want to talk about is everyone's impressed with awards and recognition,
yeah.
right? And I think for you, just like with baseball, whether it was winning national championships or getting the MVP of the tournament, yeah. which I know you got a lot of times, but it was never about the plastic trophies that collected dust. It meant something more, but you were awarded by the NCAA, the Troy Berry Award.
Yes.
And I think that recognizes character and leadership.
Yes.
Right? Tell us a little bit more about that. And I want to also understand, like, those traits don't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. You don't really just become a leader or build character, but they happen slowly over time. Can
right.
you talk a little bit about some of the things that helped you along that journey to be able to get to the point where you were recognized as, you know, one of the best of the best?
Yeah. I think it all starts with knowing what being a part of a team is. I mean, I was my first ever team I was on, you were the coach. And so you, Paul, Juvera, all those coaches that I had were like my first introduction to what being on a team was, what it was about. And I couldn't have been introduced in a better way. Just knowing that the people are around you, like support the people around you, and it's not all about what happens between the white lines and how to work together and how much better winning feels when you know you've suffered and you know you've done everything you could to prepare yourself. And like, that's where all that confidence comes from, like, and just life in general. If you know that you prepared for a test and you studied, you gave everything you got, you're most likely going to go into that test and be like, I got this. And it's the same thing with anything. It's just when you prepare, and how you guys taught us, like, it's the little things. It's showing up on time. It's standing up straight. It's sitting in front of the front of the classroom, like our college coaches would say, like, we want you to sit in the front. We want you to be attentive. It's those little things that you get over time that then can help you mold the other people on your team to do the same thing. It's you don't miss weights in the morning. If it's at 6 a.m., you're there at 5:45 and we're ready to go. I don't want to be there. I know you don't want to be there, but we're here together and we're going to do it together. And I think, like you said, being a leader doesn't just happen overnight, but I think that some people have innate leadership skills that are just in them. And maybe that is because of how they grew up or people that they've been raised with. But sometimes it comes a little bit naturally to others. And I think I just have this, like, this fire inside of me to, like, let's lift each other up. Like, let's everybody work together and just get this thing done.
Yeah. In athletics, you hear this a lot, but I think it resonates with life too. People see those folks on the podium hoisting their Olympic medals,
yeah.
or they see the awards and the recognition and all of that. And whether you're a famous actor or whether you're a famous athlete, they see all of that, but they never see all the work that happens behind the scenes
exactly.
to be able to get there. That happens in the quiet times when people aren't clapping for you.
Right.
And I think that one of the things that would be a really good message for kids your age, we were just talking about, you know, you start picking through the perfect scenario. I want to live in my hometown. I want to make six figures. I want to do all this. And people in your generation have been used to instant gratification.
Yeah,
you want something, you go on Amazon, you click the button and it's there tomorrow. And I think there's a message in the way you've approached it and tackled it that is providing true leadership to kids from your generation. And that is, There is no such thing as instant gratification. No. You're going to get out, and it's okay not to take the six-figure job. It's okay to not be in your hometown. You pick your way through it.
Right.
You check boxes along the way, and you stay really, really consistent and focused on what that mission was.
Right. And it's beauty in the struggle. I think that the process is the, it's not the, when you receive the award, like that's not the beautiful things. It's the, it's when you're down in the dumps and you just keep going and you keep going. And like, this reminds me of when we were like, the best parts about baseball weren't when we won the championships. Like it was when you're making me sprint around Heiser Health and I don't want to do it and I can't do it anymore, but my buddy's next to me doing it and I'm going to do it with him. Or that mental toughness where you don't want to keep going, but you have to keep going and you're not going to stop. And I think that's prepared me. Like when we would do, have you heard of the Omaha Challenge before?
I have. Yeah.
It's what they do at like Division I schools that like test the mental, physical strength of the baseball team. And the goal is to go to Omaha. So at my Division II school, the national championship is in Cary, North Carolina. So we would do a Cary challenge, and you could tell the people who have been put through a lot of mental toughness, like preparation or however you would do their mental toughness has been tested and who hasn't. And you have to push, like your body will stop at a certain limit, but your mind will keep going and you can push past a certain amount of pain or whatever. And you could just really see that, like some of my buddies that are like big and strong and like, I was 5'8", 150 pounds, and I'm like killing these people in these challenges and like the, like, and it's supposed to like test your physical strength. That's not what it's about. It's about how much can you put your mind through and your body through at the same time, if you get what I'm saying.
Of course you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for athletes like you who have always had that outlet,
yeah,
there's something to like fuel that passion or to like keep you going. This is an important time in your life because you've hung up the cleats,
yeah,
at least officially, right? And so I think that it's about how do I recognize that that was something that filled my cup, that was meaningful for me, yeah, that made my life unique and special, that I really enjoyed, mm-hmm, challenging myself and going through, yeah, mental toughness exercises, right, and, you know, competing for a goal, mm-hmm, right? Having a goal, whether that's we want to win the national championship in Cary or whatever it is, but recognizing first that that's something that's really important to you, and then figuring out how, when you put the bat bag away, mm-hmm, you can actually do things in your life in that same way.
Right.
Set goals, work hard to achieve them, you know, work hard, be nice, good things happen, yeah, right? And keep that. How are you doing that now?
Well, I will say baseball tested my mental strength to crazy capacity, but nothing will test my mental more than working with children with disabilities. I'll tell you that. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's, oh, they're like, it's so sweet. Like what you do is so nice. But, and like you said, you don't see behind the scenes, like you're getting bit, you're getting spit on, you're getting pee on the floor. You're getting all this stuff that is, it's not fun to deal with. Like, but being able to push through that and understand like, this is not about you, Drake. Like this is not, they're not doing this to you. This is just, it's just what's happening in their life. And they don't have the tools to express what they want. And so they're expressing it this way. And that's not anybody's fault. That's just what is, that's just the facts. And so, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, it's just for kids with disabilities. What's a win look like?
I think a win could look like finishing your breakfast, like drinking your water without spilling it. And I guess it depends on the person's disability and what restrictions they have. But for example, at my work, like when I hear a kid look at something that's blue and say blue, that's a win. That's a huge win. When a kid doesn't hit one of his peers for the hour session that I have him, like that's a win. Going to the bathroom, that's a win. Standing up and going to the bathroom, like that's a win. Wow. And these are younger children, six year olds, and some are two. 2 to 6 year olds, but even for the 6 year olds, the going to the bathroom, that's a win, dude. Like, I'm so proud of you. Like, good job. And it's called non-contingent reinforcement. We try to provide a lot that's, you don't need to do anything to receive reinforcement. So you're walking in the hallway, dude, I'm so proud of you for walking in the hallway. Like, look at you. Like, cause he could be sprinting down the hallway. He could be jumping off the walls, but just reinforcing that behavior of, dude, I'm proud of you. Like, and just letting them know that.
Drake, I love you so much. You are so I love cool. You so much, man, part of this podcast, we talk a lot about, and you may or may not have listened to some of the previous episodes, but we talk about finding joy in the small things in life.
Yeah.
Making the little things the big things was something that one of my friends, Todd Lanham, shared on one of the recent podcasts. When it comes to working with these kids with physical challenges, right? Mm-hmm. What have they taught you most about resilience? Or, you know, we talked about finding joy in the everyday moment, or really what you said earlier that just struck me so hard was, what does it mean to be fully human?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So can you tell a little bit about what they've taught you about resiliency, finding moments of joy in the small things?
Well, let me ask you a question first.
Absolutely. Far away.
You might not have a lot of experience, but in what experience you've had with encountering people with disabilities, like are they usually happy or sad?
I feel like most of the time they're very happy.
Yeah. And I agree with that statement. Most of my interactions with people with disabilities are very positive outlook. Now, that's not all. There are some people that, like everybody, some people are, they could have depression or they could have anxiety. And so they're not overwhelmed with joy. But most of the interactions I have, I mean, they light your day up. They're just like, they're so engaged with you. And like, just you smiling at them is just like, like they're so happy. And I like, they, not that they shouldn't be happy, but they have something to complain about. They have something to be like God or whatever higher power you believe in. Like, they put me in a position where I'm different. And so they should be angry at the world, but no, we're the ones that are angry at the world when our coffee spills on our shirt before work, or our car, the check engine light comes on and you're just pissed, or you're driving down the road and somebody cuts you off, and we're miserable with our day. But the people that got a bad hand are the happiest people in the world.
Yeah.
So I think it shows me, like, and my girlfriend showed me a TikTok the other day that was like, your car's having troubles. Maybe that's because, or you had to take your car into the shop. Maybe that's because in 2 days you were going to get in a fatal car accident. Like, if it didn't, or, just bad things that happen could be for the right reasons, if you know what I mean.
Of course.
And I think that just people with disabilities, man, like they have the good outlook on life. Like, they don't have the noise that's around. They're just living in the present moment. I think that's what being fully human is living in the right now. They're not worried about, oh, what do I got to do tomorrow? What do I got to do this week? I got a meeting. I got this. No, they're just like, they're where their feet are. I think that's a very important
something thing. As I get older, I'm really focused on, and I'm learning, is that the past doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times when we have anxiety, depression, or we're not present, mm-hmm. we're just kind of going about our life every day.
Yeah.
Our mind is either living in the past,
yeah.
which doesn't exist anymore, or it's worried about something in the future, which hasn't even happened yeah. yet. And so it's that living in the moment and having small joy in the things that happen to you on 100%. A regular basis.
And I struggle with that every day. I'm a very much live in the future mindset. I'm very much preparing right now for the future. But then a year ago, I was preparing myself for right now. And I'm like, I'm supposed to have everything I wanted, right? Like, I graduated college, I got the job. Like, so why am I worried about the next step? Like, you're never going to be satisfied unless you enjoy the process. Like, the process is what it's about, right?
Beautiful.
It's not about the goal that you reach, because once you reach that goal, it's like, okay, what do I do now? You're going to make another goal.
Yeah.
So the majority of the time you're going to be spent in the process. So you got to love the process.
I don't know where you learned all this. It's pretty impressive.
I don't know. I just, and like, I can talk about these things, right? But it's a completely different thing living it. And I struggle with that all the time. Like, we can all sit on a podcast and say, like, yeah, like, I enjoy the process every single day. No, I do not enjoy the process every single day. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes I don't want to go to work. Sometimes the kids that I work with frustrate me. Sometimes they make me mad. Sometimes I have to step back and take a deep breath, or like, I'm going to lose it. Like, I need to detach for a second, because it's tough. It's not easy.
But it's worth it.
It's worth it 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, when you hear the kid say blue, when you hear the kid say his mom's name for the first time, and the next day his mom comes in and said, he called me by my name yesterday, and seeing that in their eyes, like, there's nothing better than that.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, and it's the coolest thing ever.
What doesn't come through on podcast is that when you're telling these stories, man, you're beaming, you're smiling. Yeah. Like, maybe you can hear it in your, you know, you can hear the smile in your voice or whatever, but it's just great to see you just light up when you talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And isn't that what most people want, is that you don't have to go through this formulaic, what society tells you, process that you have, right? It's like 4 years you're out of college, mm-hmm. 4 years out of college, you better be married and you better be thinking about having kids and you better be on this path. And do you have this type of car, or do you have this type of car, or are you living in this big of a house or that big of a house? You know, I think your generation has a chance to break that cycle. It's like, this is all bullshit.
Yeah.
This is all bullshit. This is not the 1950s anymore. No. It's not the 1940s. This is a new generation, and we don't have to go about life this way.
No.
You got me really thinking when you asked my question about when I have interacted with either children or adults with disabilities, and you talked about what they want most is to be, just to feel fully human, to be a human being. And I think that it's got me rethinking my interactions, because I think a lot of the time I'm very in tune with the being very respectful and going out of my way to be helpful to people with, you know, special needs or disabilities. And I wonder if that's a little patronizing. It's, you know, it's those small interactions that make me feel really uncomfortable, where I'm at the airport and I see someone struggling in a wheelchair, and I want to be the one to help them out and, you know, clear the path for them, or treat them a little bit special because I know they need help.
Yeah.
But I kind of get a sense of what you're talking about. And that's always been in the back of my mind, is, would it have been better if I just approached them like anyone else? And
100%. Well, I think that's, like, it's a fine line, right? Like, if it's something where they could get hurt or they're alone and it's really struggling, like, yeah, of course, go up to them. Like, someone, like, if you saw they didn't have a disability, you'd still go up to them and help them. But this reminds me of an example. I worked at a special needs camp called Dreams with Wings on Bardstown Road. Shout out Dreams with Wings. But there was a girl that, when we would go to the movie theater, she would order nachos, popcorn, large soda, 7 things of candy. Like, she didn't have enough money for that. So I would sit, like, when we were standing in line, I'm like, all right, look, we have this, we have $20. What do you want? Do you want popcorn and nachos? Do you want popcorn and this, or whatever we talked about? And she's like, yeah, I'll get popcorn and a drink. And I'm like, okay. So we went up there and she's like, I want a popcorn, a drink, nachos, and Twizzlers. And the guy's like, okay, that'll be $27. And she hands him a 20. He's like, this isn't enough money, but don't worry. Like, we got it. And I'm like, no, she doesn't have enough money to buy what she needs. And some people are like, oh, just give it to her. But she's very functional, and she's manipulating someone. She knows that I can get what I want. Like, I know what I'm doing, but in reality, if you have $20 and something is $27, you can't buy that.
Yeah.
You have to sacrifice sometimes. And I think and she's 20 years old. She graduated from high school. And that's an important lesson that I tried to teach her. Like, listen, like, sometimes we shouldn't manipulate people into getting what we want. And, it's just you shouldn't lower your expectations for someone just because you think that they're not capable of something, or, like, I don't know. I hope you get what I'm...
I definitely get what you're saying. And it really is this fine line for people who are trying to be considerate and compassionate and empathetic, but also not patronizing that person or not... There's times to be helpful, but there's other times that just figuring it out is the best part of the what you can help them do. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
They have to knock down their own barriers. Yeah. Right. They have to be able to pass through their own obstacles, and they need the training. And I think that's what you're most passionate about is helping people feel more human.
Yes.
By humanizing things that they need to do to be able to navigate their
100%.
Life.
100%. Like, my goal is, I want them to be as independent as possible. I want them to be able to go into, like, have a service that allows them to have their own apartment, and they live by themselves, and they know how to cook their dinner. They know they can socially interact with the people around them. Like, that's my goal for the people that I work with. And I want to push them to the best of their abilities. And it's like, just because they have a disability doesn't mean that they aren't able. And I think that's a big thing. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, as we get towards the close of our time together, and we're going to have to do this again. Yeah, you are so good at this. I got to tell you what, I'm a little choked up. I'm just so damn proud of the man that you're becoming and have become already. Go through your mental checklist. There were certain things you said I want to make sure we cover today on the podcast. And if we didn't cover those, let's make sure to knock those out now. Because you got a tremendous voice. Not just your radio ready voice you got from your mom.
Yeah.
Shout out to Amy Nick, Radio Chick.
Mm-hmm. Amy Nick, the Radio Chick.
But no, the actual message that you're sending is just so powerful. But did you go through your mental checklist or anything?
Yeah, we checked off everything on my list, but I'm good for a few other questions if you want.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of questions I ask every one of my guests. Okay. And I think what's one thing that's really cool, I think, about podcasting is that I'm not in this to be the next Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
You give me Joe Rogan vibes, though.
Okay, maybe. I'll appreciate that. I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah,
good. Well, I'm not in it for that. Right. I think what started this journey for me was that I loved people telling me their story.
Right.
And what has carried forward for me is that what we're doing here is making such a positive impact. We're using social media. We're using technology, podcasts, to do something really positive and beautiful, but we're also preserving these conversations for eternity.
Yep.
So one day you're going to be my age, you're going to be 50, and you can go back and listen to the 22 year old version of Drake Ballard. And I think that's going to be really powerful for you. It's going to, so put you on the spot a little bit, two questions.
Okay.
I met you when you were 8 years old.
Yep.
You showed up for tryouts with your, what's it called? Spray painted name on your, name on your helmet. And I think you'd just come from a tryout where, you know, parents were furious that the coach hadn't seen any, enough in you to make the team. And I immediately captured on, but that Drake Ballard, what do you want to tell him now? What does the 22-year-old version of Drake want to tell 8-year-old Drake?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I would tell him to listen and to learn from the people that have done it before you. I think sometimes I think that the way that I think is the right way. And especially my younger self, like, listen to the people that have done it before. Learn as much as you can. And continue to be kind to the person that's next to you, because you don't know what's happening in their life or what's going on. Be kind and listen, I think, and learn. Just learn. You can never stop learning.
Okay, so we're going to flip the script a little bit. We just talked about your old man like me.
Yeah.
All right. Your cute 22-year-old mustache is now a big gray beard and you're bald. What does 22-year-old Drake want to tell 50-year-old Drake? Because you're going to be able to listen to this when you're 50. What do you want to tell that version of you?
Oh, that's hard, because you don't know, like, what happens through those years. But hopefully I would say that I'm proud of him for pushing through and keep going. Cause I know that those years are going to be filled with probably happiness, but probably a lot of sadness, probably a lot of loss. That I've thanked God that I've had four grandparents my whole life, but I know that that's not going to last forever. So like, I'm proud of you for still going and just proud that we made it. Like, we did it.
Listen to me. Your 50-year-old self is going to need to hear that.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really powerful right. to that person. Drake, you've exceeded my expectations. And here's my one ask of you is that I want to do this again.
Yeah, we should do part two.
Part two, at least. Yeah. You're really good at this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I didn't know what we were going to talk about,
yeah.
To be honest. And it's kind of blown me away. It's got me thinking, and for all the right reasons. And that's the goal of this, too, is to lift up those voices like yours. That not everything is so negative. Not everything right. is so divided. Not everything's so disconnected mm-hmm. in the world today. And so I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, too.
So, So in closing, I would say, in every age, there are those who rise quietly, not with applause, but with purpose. People like Drake. They're the ones who remind us that progress is not a sprint towards glory, but a slow, steady devotion to the good. Drake stands among them. His life is a story of courage that breathes not in headlines, but in human hearts. From the dugouts of Crosby Park to the hallowed halls of Purdue Northwest, his victories were never about the scoreboard. They're about lifting others higher, about showing that strength and tenderness can live in the same soul. In an era when truth bends under algorithms and self-worth is often measured in likes and hashtags, Drake offers a counterweight to us, a reminder that authenticity still matters, that compassion is still good currency, and that character remains undefeated. To the young listeners who feel overwhelmed by the noise, uncertain of your direction, I want you to hear this. Your empathy is not a weakness. It's your compass, your capacity to care, to listen, to see others as humans. That's the quiet revolution that will heal what divides us as a country and as a world. The Next Generation series isn't just a series, it's kind of a constellation. A gathering of stories, each one a small but shining act of resistance against apathy. Drake's story is the first star in the constellation that we're building. So as this episode fades, may his example linger, reminding us that the story of us, it's still being written. One act of kindness, one brave choice, one honest life at a time. And so as we close today, may we remember, the dawn belongs to those who dare to serve the light.
100%. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Appreciate you, Drake.
I love you, Jeff. All right. You're the man.
Thanks, bud.